Greetings and salutations from the Agile Revolution. This is Tony.
And Craig.
And we have a very special guest, Jeff Smith.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
We're at the Agile Australia 2018 conference, and you were the original keynote speaker 10 years ago, Jeff.
10 years, yes. It's great to see so much, has grown. And it's hard because you come in when there's, literally 100 people there the first time and then see no chairs available this time, which is great.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is the 10th anniversary for those that aren't aware. I noted one of your comments today when you were speaking was that, there was about 200 or 300 and there was a couple of people off the street. We were literally giving tickets away to get people to come.
I remember looking and I was disappointed that almost everyone I saw I knew. Because it was Suncorp and ThoughtWorks people, and I thought, we just got to get more people interested than a few. I think a little bit of REA was there, but not much.
Yeah,
certainly come a long way.
Mm. Well, how many this year? About 1,200, 1,300 people?
Yeah.
That's a testament to what we started.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so you guys should be proud of that.
So we don't often talk about where we come from a lot on this podcast, but we all come from the same place. And but your Agile journey, Jeff, started quite a while ago. Just tell us a little bit about how you got involved in all this and why it became such an important part of what you do.
I think one thing people forget is I started at Telstra here and I had thousands of people, and then you get a bit lazy. Because things are kind of done for you and you've always got enough people, enough money. And I went and ran a startup for a while, and I went from having thousands to like 40. And that's where I met some ex-thought workers and stuff and started to see, the difference when you have high talent density teams. And I thought, shit, I got more people, more work done with 40 than I did with 1,000. And that's where I got the impetus and then coming to Suncorp, and you guys know we were going through this big merger. I'm like, fuck, let's see if we can apply this to the whole company. And there was a lot of pushback, and I kind of like that. I like a little bit of conflict that, if someone says something can't be done, that's like the keep off the grass moment, and then the first thing you want to do is go prove that you could build something that's fundamentally different. And I think we did that at Suncorp. And, it was perfectly applicable at IBM, and the crazy thing was my talent density at Suncorp was far better than IBM, which was surprising. But it's because we cared about it, and we got better at it. And it's hard, you guys would know, but it's hard if you look back when we started, and you look when we ended, we kind of went through the continuous integration, continuous delivery, build automation on platforms, digital platforms, and cloud. I mean, we got a lot better, and you just don't go from 0 to 100. You have to practice it and get better at it.
And I think Jeff, one of the things that I always wanted to sort of say to you was that one of the things that you did for me, I worked on a project which was the internet banking project where we built it, homegrown, and you gave us that opportunity and you backed that team. And to this day, that is one of the best projects I've ever worked on in my life. So much so that the culture that we built around it, which was enabled by yourself, that allowed us to build, yes, internet banking, but to build a team that now come from all over the world, wherever they are, for a reunion. And that's the strength of agility.
Yeah, I remember when we started that, people thought we were kind of nuts. Again, do we need to go into this? Is it necessary now? And it still is amazing to me, kind of the lack of people's curiosity to try new things. That there still is the penchant to, let's just rely on what we already know. And I think, that's something that's neat about opportunities like that, because it forces you to try something different. And that was, with a very small investment in team, that wasn't big compared to what the banks were putting, the bigger, larger banks were putting into it. So it just goes to show the, it's kind of your scale of thoughts more important than the scale of people.
Absolutely. And I remember one of the things that's always stuck with me was in the early days of the change program, Katie Rowett was running that, and the fact that
I had lunch with her yesterday, by the way.
How's she doing?
Yeah, good.
We had the pipeline directly to you. So what we were seeing on the ground could come back to you and the executive committee. And I remember being in one of those, lucky enough to be in a number of the IT executive meetings at the time. I remember when the guide wire implementation came up, and these three people walked into the room and gave their pitch that they could possibly do this complete insurance rewrite in an agile fashion. Mm. I remember the doors closing, and all the suits in the room, won't mention any names, all went to this, yeah. Not sure we can do that. I just remember you sort of standing up and saying, we're going to give these guys a go, and if it doesn't, we'll be leaders and lead them. And,
yep.
It's that kind of stuff that makes a difference. We heard it a number of times at the conference today. Leadership leading from the top.
Yep, absolutely. And this stuff, if you back stuff with smart people, you'll generally be able to make stuff happen. And maybe you have to do some course corrections. But I think, there's so much fear, uncertainty, and doubt with people. In a lot of cases, because they failed a lot. And if you fail multiple times, the first thing you generally think is why something won't work. But if you've had a few successes, and I think what we got good at was as we started building up these successes, we got a bit of battle-hardened confidence. And then I still remember the discussions about cloud, which was way early than anyone else. And I remember we debated it for about an hour, and then our debate came down to, let's don't waste our time figuring out what won't move to the cloud. Let's move everything. When we find stuff that won't move, we'll stop. And I thought that was such a great depiction of where the culture had gotten to, which we just back ourselves. And if stuff doesn't work, we deal with it.
And for me, that's what I always talk about. So you hear safe to fail all the time, right, in the agile atmosphere. But it's you have to have that culture that enables that safe to fail moment, right? And the ability to pull back when you necessarily do. And I think that's where we'd got to.
Yeah. Well, but the other thing is, we didn't fail that much.
No.
I mean, it's one thing. I think safe to fail is great when you have the small failures. What you don't want are the major screw-ups.
Yes.
The one thing I always sort of wanted to ask is when you first took the gig at Suncorp, how was it received? Because it was a big part of your platform. We talked before. I remember your first town hall meeting and me gritting my teeth and going, hey, there's some people doing some agile here.
We're actually here. We just need help to come out from under the ground.
I was waiting for the pink slip to come the next day.
John Mulcahy, the CEO, was real good about it, and he supported me a lot. You kind of need that kind of sponsorship, because it would have been easy for him to say, you don't know anything about banking, just stick to your knitting and don't try something new, but he didn't. Mm. So I looked at him, and the support I had from peers and stuff was really good, and wanting just to do something different. So I was quite lucky, to be honest. It would have been easy to have said, you just go spend a year or two learning about banking and insurance, but that's not what happened.
Hmm. No, certainly. And then things like, the Agile Academy was another big...
That was the secret sauce.
Yeah. Now, what was sort of the impetus behind this whole internal training program? Because it was a big difference for a financial institution to essentially become a learning organization.
I think, one, there wasn't a lot of good content. And then remember, we had these debates about, well, how do we make this sustainable? How do you make it something you can learn and practice together? And that's what drove it. Now, our intention was we were hoping lots of other companies would come and also contribute. And that didn't happen. That was the disappointing part of it. But I think the fact that we were still willing to fund it, because no matter what, we were going to benefit from it. But it was also, the concept that, learning matters, and that it just doesn't happen by accident. It happens by plan. So I think we did a good job of taking that seriously.
And the interesting thing is, it became such a self-fulfilling entity that concept, initiate, deliver, and deploy became a thing.
Yeah.
And, particularly in this country. Like,
and people still talk about it. And I sort of go, well, we really sort of made that up, right? Yeah. It wasn't a thing.
Yeah, it was good, though. I think we were pretty good at kind of learning, while we were moving at the same time, right? Mm. Because we had good aspirations, and I think we just backed ourselves. And I think if we'd have had people that didn't want to do stuff and we didn't have the talent and aspiration, maybe things would have been different. But kind of lucky, the situation we were in, and people forget too, it wasn't soon after I started that we also had the financial crisis hit. And the fact that we kept going, that's probably the real miracle, because it would have been really easy to kill all that. And we didn't. We didn't kill that. We didn't kill the undergraduate recruiting, the intern. We kept going when we were essentially underwater.
Yeah.
So that, I thought, was the biggest signal to me, and again, good support. It would have been really easy for the CFO to come and say, kill all that, shut it down until the financial crisis is over. Then we'd have been we'd have been waiting years.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were reminiscing this morning, as we do, because we get to that stage. And one of those things that we were reminiscing about was the building quality project and how far ahead of its time it was.
Yeah.
Because people are talking about that stuff that we were doing now, that we were doing then, right? And it's we're ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I remember some of the stuff. I remember Colin McCurick, I think he was using sonar or something as well. But I remember him saying, yeah, we're going to embarrass people that when they, if they put some, you know, bad code in, we're going to flash their name and their picture up and stuff. And I thought he was kidding, but then he showed me he was actually willing. But I think the fact we wanted to take it seriously, we had a lot of really good thinkers, right? We had, and tough problems. I remember, you know, at that time, the cloud wasn't prevalent. We were like, well, how do we get our build times down? You know, do we have to soup up the machines? You know, can we have all sorts of stuff. Maybe we can have virtual environments and do it. Remember how we were really trying, you know, we just didn't give up. I think more than anything, we didn't give up.
I think we had some successes too. I mean, I think about, you know, things like, I mean, I'm holding an iPhone in my hand, but, you know, rolling iPhones out when that was a taboo subject, you know, rolling out the virtual desktop, and then it's saving our butt when the flood came running down the river because we could get people to work from home because, you know, people had taken some bets and...
Yeah, and even the virtual desktops for call centers and then the work from home options that we opened up in call centers really helped. And there's still companies today just starting.
And notwithstanding, we were the first company to roll out mobile phone banking in Australia.
Yeah.
Little old Suncorp at the time.
And won a lot of awards for it, which is, I think, you know, pretty amazing. But that just comes down to great people and, you know, and I think just working through problems, you know, because none of this stuff is problem-free. You know, that's the real thing, is just to, you know, to be able to work through stuff. And we had a good culture for that.
So you've moved on now, obviously, and you're at an energy company. So you've taken those lessons with you. So how are you applying those?
Well, a lot of it, you know, you take the stuff that worked. You mean, if you get a good recipe for a cake, you keep using it. So the concept of an Agile Academy, the concept of coaching, I think, you know, what I've spent more time on is, you know, appropriate measures to send the right signals to people. I still think it's hard for companies to build good leaders, because leaders generally are interested in managing tons of people, and you have to get leaders interested in creating great teams. So I think and if you think about Amazon's mechanisms, you know, how do they reinforce stuff? We've kind of taken that and said, well, if we have our coaches, we've got our curriculum, we've got our leadership maturity assessment, squad maturity assessment, measures that matter, then we've got our mechanisms to drive stuff. So I think we've just added to what we started with, didn't change it if it was working. And again, bringing other people. I mean, you guys know, you know, Phil's kind of like followed me around, and Frank a bit, and then getting other people that were passionate about this and adding to the mix. So I think one thing it's proven is it's continued. The fact that I've continued to use it is because it's worked.
Yeah.
So, and that even at IBM, which is hard. I mean, I had 23,000 people there, and then 300,000 people to put through some training and education in a culture where people were generally looking over their back, afraid they're going to get laid off, because that's the culture was every quarter to do that. So that was really hard. But I mean, at the end of the day, the stuff worked.
Yeah, it was interesting in your talk today. You talked about you mentioned the leadership before, but this whole idea of you know, measuring the leaders and then and then measuring the teams, so to speak. And probably more importantly, that whole transparency of, you know, the school. I mean, in an organization, I mean, I can imagine that, you know, in an energy company, that they're used to, you know, traditional ways. I mean, how are those types of ideas, you know, taken by the executive?
I think initially shock, because they don't do it themselves. But then what happens is, because they are interested in looking at improvements. And if you can show, and I think like the transparency on like net promoter scores on leaders and stuff like that, that really hit, because I could sit there and say, well, it's obviously accurate. Look at the Glassdoor rating. Look at the net promoter score. You know, they correlate. And now here's the trend, and the trend's going up. It's getting better. So I think the fact that it gives not only the people that you're putting through that maturity assessment, but also my peers and the board. The board's very interested in this because they want to know what's our talent mix. And the only way to effectively evaluate talent is to see the real evidence. And I know when I started at World Fuel, the first I asked a question at a town hall: how many people do we think have really talented, dev squads and stuff? Oh yeah, very talented. I'm like, well, where's the evidence? Do we do any daily deployments? Like silence, any automated testing, build automation. So guys, you have to, this is all evidence based. If you can show me, I can size it. I mean, I've got one thing being around for a while, I can size groups up pretty quickly. I knew right away that our talent density wasn't high because the experience of what we could do wasn't high. Mm. So I think, but once you knock the chip off people's shoulders, they want to get better. And I think that is half the battle, is getting people to recognize.
One of the things that I thank you for, the saying I always take around, is something you said to me when we were setting up, I think it was the banking platform, could have been the insurance one, who knows, so many of them, but that availability is not a skill set.
And that's
something that I still use to this day, because that's one of the things that I see, leadership just don't get. It's like there's someone free, just throw them on the
well project. And that a team is something you construct overnight and put people together, and yet you never see a great sports team do that. I mean, they practice and play together for a while before they get better. So assigning people to something overnight and saying, well, now you're a team, well, that team hasn't worked together, you have no idea what their productivity is going to be. So you have to really think of not agile projects but agile teams that manage a backlog in as much as possible end to end, all the support, all the development, and then you have to have the right tooling to support them. I know one thing we did at IBM that was kind of neat. The team started saying, well, we've got to have better instrumentation if we're going to be able to do both. So then we went out and we said, well, here's a great company, New Relic. They seem to really have their act together. That we really need a different way of incident management so we can tie it into our Slack channels, and we picked PagerDuty, and then we hooked both of those into Slack channel, and we made the incident management not go to an individual, go to a team. So we had to change this whole concept that nothing was individual based, it's all team, and that worked. Our mean time to restore went down 80%. Playing with better players, tackling a problem, and thinking of it from a team point of view. So you have to have a permanent team. That's not going to work if you disband a team, throw something else together. That would fall over very quickly.
That's something you were saying again in your keynote, and something that I think we appreciated from the time working with you, is bringing that good talent early in the days. We found people like AWS, and you're saying now you're talking to people like Zoom and PagerDuty and those type of people. How do you convince leadership who are kind of used to this world? We've always bought stuff from Microsoft. Let's go and do it that way, instead to go and look different and take a bet on. Because sometimes I think something like NetApp, for example, that we had
big
at SunCorp,
bet. Yeah.
That was a big bet.
NetApp, actually, the chairman told me, because don't waste time on people that don't want to follow what you want to do. Because it's wasted energy. Spend it on the good people, and you can get consumed by trying to convince people. Because there is a bit of, if you want to do change, a benevolent dictatorship. Because culture is top down, and when you want to do something, you don't want to limit people's feedback to you. That things aren't right. If people say this isn't going to work, then you need to listen to that. But more often than not, it's people haven't spent the time. You can tell very quickly. It's easy for me to size up someone, and do they actually know what they're talking about? Are they actually against this because they've got good experience, or are they against it because they're just protecting what they've done? But most companies have surrounded themselves with the companies that are being disrupted, not the disruptors. And at IBM, our three big partners were like SAP, Cisco, and AT&T. Well, three old tired companies doesn't make a good one. You had to change the mix there to play up. And it's just, one, it's fascinating for me to meet new companies. I like it because there's always somebody out there that is changing the game. PagerDuty is a great company. The woman that runs it, Jennifer Tejeda, she may be one of the best leaders I've ever met. And I wanted to do work with them. I mean, incident management, there's lots of software for incident management. Right? This is a different thing. It's just a different way of managing a great environment. And they're equally as concerned on your dev practices as they are the software.
Mm.
I found that very interesting. So I've learned a lot from being around better people.
Mm.
And I'm pretty good at, if you know, I think, yeah, even at World Fuel, people thought, well, I would naturally, because I've got a lot of experience and background with AWS, that everything would have to be there. I've given Microsoft and the Azure team equal opportunity, and I like a lot of the stuff that they're doing. So I'm a practical person. I have if I see something that we can learn from and be materially better, I'm all for it.
That's good. One of the things that piqued my interest in the keynote is something that a lot of leaders wouldn't do. And you spoke a lot about how you picked the new leaders. But what you spoke about is the ones who didn't make the cut. And actually spending time with them.
Yeah.
Do you want to speak about it? Because that, to me...
Yeah, it was interesting. The first port of call was HR. I said, Jeff, don't worry about it. We'll... In the context of this is we had 55 executives and we went to 26. So roughly 50% less. Because our span, you know, when you do your bottom-up design, you just need, you know, you have a wider span of control and you have less overhead functions because you don't have, you know, you guys say, oh, no, I never like these VP of architectures and projects and stuff. Practitioners have to be in a squad, so you just naturally have less. And the natural thing was HR and most companies will take care of this. The execs kind of take their fingers out of it. I'm like, no, I drove this. I want to front them. So we brought all people together and walked through why we did it and how we made the selection, what their assessments were. I went through and I'd show them the scorecard, I'd show them why we didn't. And it was very mature. He's amazing. And actually, a number of those people, we kept them on for a couple of months to help on the transition. And they thanked us for it. And even when they left, it was really interesting. It was, I didn't detect any negative stuff at all. I even did reference checks for some. We kept LinkedIn pieces, but they really appreciated the fact they were involved in the design. That was a real good lesson in that I spent the time with them and I just didn't hide behind a door and let HR go and give them a package, right? Because I really wanted them to know how we went through it. And they appreciated that. And they all knew we had too many execs. So I think the other thing was there was no shock of why would we be doing this. And it was disappointment that they would like to have had a role, but I spent a whole day with them.
So one of the other jobs you're doing is advising the ANZ board.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you've had experience in Suncorp, obviously, also in IBM and World Fuels and Telstra and other places. But taking the Suncorp to the ANZ, you know, being in the same market, but ANZ being a, you know, materially bigger organisation, what are some of the similarities, but also some of the differences you're seeing and the challenges that they're going to have? Because I think the interesting thing about ANZ to me is that it's probably one of the first transformations I've seen where it's the CEO who's at the front of the change. It's typically been people like you at the you know, from the technical angle.
No, Shane is tremendous. He has a really, really broad vision. And he talked to me a number of times before they decided to do this, and I had given him some advice and stuff. I think, you know, go see ING and, you know, take a look at these. And he would just follow it. I spent time with him this morning, you know, today before his keynote. He wants to learn, and he wants to do what the best companies are doing. And he'll spend the time on it. It'd be very easy to get consumed as CEO on your own business. The fact that he can spend time outside is the most extraordinary thing to me. So I think, one, that makes the CIO's job and the chief digital officer's job a lot easier to have that. Not that that's an easy job, because that's tough in a big place. So I think the similarities are, regardless of size, banking has the same regulatory environments, generally has the same types of systems. You get a retail bank, commercial bank, things like that. So I think the similarities are greater than the differences. Scale, yeah, bigger, but does that make it more complex? I'm not so sure. And they actually have, you know, a good chunk of their people here in Melbourne. So I always think the complexity they had at IBM is people were everywhere. And it's hard to create good chemistry that way. But ANZ has that here. It's just in the questions, the things we were talking about today is, you know, can we apply this across other areas in ANZ, you know, tax and, you know, and treasury things. I said, absolutely, I'm doing that at World Fuels. Absolutely can. The practices may be different, maybe some Kanban methods and some other stuff, but you absolutely can, and you should. So he's reaching out and stuff, and I really like that. So it gives me a chance once a quarter to come back and kind of keep acquainted with what's happening in financial services, for one, but also, you know, I've learned a lot from being in a big company like IBM. I've learned a lot from being in banking, and now I have a chance, you know, in global energy management, which is probably the sector that's going through the most change globally. Mm-hmm. So that's neat. But I think, you know, this stuff with ANZ, one, there's a lot of paths that have already been worn, and they can follow a lot of that. So I think we were kind of groundbreaking in a lot, and, you know, kind of designing as we went along, faith that we would figure it out. So I think they need a little bit less faith. It needs just as much discipline and conviction to get it done.
That's the interesting thing, discipline. So I think that's the thing that I see the most now working with lots of different companies, is that lack of the discipline to take it to the next level. They have the want, but they just don't want to apply that discipline.
Well, I think the epiphany for me in my current job that I probably should have realized earlier was, because I did have this question, one of my peers at company says, well, listen, you can make any structure work. I said, actually, you can't. It has everything to do with, if you're going to have self-directed, end-to-end, cross-functional teams, you need to be structured to support that. And in the way most companies are organized is the way I had on that chart. You know, they're organized in silos. So how in the world can you really have a sustainable agile culture until you reform the teams? It's a bit of 52-card pickup. But we've got really disciplined in that in my current role, and I like it. I mean, it's every day I'm on top of it. Every Friday we've got a squad roll out, and have we taken the people out of the different areas and formed new teams? So the reality is every person at World Fuel is in a new team for a new manager, and that's hard to do. And yet things haven't fallen apart. And in fact, our metrics are going up. Here's an interesting one. I was just looking at some of the metrics this morning. Our defect rates, or not defect rates, our production support tickets is a basic measure, right? It's fallen off a cliff. And our guys were in, Richard DeLissa, who you guys know, he said it to me. He said, yeah, I'm not sure why this is happening. We got on a call, why is this happening? And the clearest thing we have is because now they're cross-functional teams, the people that used to be doing support separate from the development, well, guess what they'd rather work on?
Yeah.
The development.
Yeah,
they're fixing stuff faster. They're in the same team. They don't need a ticket. So it's interesting.
Either that, or they've got access to the cabling room and just unplug the line.
Yeah, well, so, that's one way to do it.
But, you know, it's you again, the I guess my point is the structure of the team matters. Mm. The fact that one backlog is carrying all of it. Now, they're seeing it, they're fixing it. It's not separate teams. Mm. So that to me just reinforced again my belief that this whole reforming the teams around the work is the most important thing to do. And that's my real, I think, learning the last year or two.
So you know, let's just say we're back here in 10 years' time. I'm not sure there will be an agile conference. Let's just spitball for a moment. I mean, what are the types of things that you're thinking of going forward? Do you have any sort of insights on things that in the next sort of, you know, 5 years or so that companies like World Fuel and ANZ might have to think about?
I think it's a combination of a virtual world and a physical world. I mean, the thing I really like about the energy sector is, yeah, we have a digital marketplace, so we can go and buy jet fuel and Qantas can buy it. But then we actually physically have to deliver it. So the thing that we also are working on is we have to have all of these IoT devices in all of our trucks so we can track stuff. And then we're doing a lot with machine learning for route optimization. So because trucks can have different types of fuel, and at which place do you go first, and here's the order. So I think you're going to see a lot more that kind of integrate the physical and the virtual world. And I think in terms of the next big disruption for IT vendors, it's going to be in the network space. That the service providers, anyone that makes hardware, the Cisco's, things like that, they're in a world of hurt. I mean, going to be. This is my opinion, because this what I'm seeing right now is the concept of cloud is going to move beyond servers and storage to the network side.
What's kind of left in the data room now? You know, a couple of mainframes and a bunch of racks, right?
And we're having to address it because our vision is we're going to shut all the data centers down. If you have to shut data centers down, you've got to take PBX things out. You got to take appliances out. You know, and you've got to take all this, and then you start to see that actually there are options to do this. Mm. And then when you look at the cost, you're like, holy shit, this is magnitudes less. And it's software based. So I think that's a big change because that's going to hit, you know, the disruption that hit the hardware makers when Amazon and Microsoft started to grow is going to happen to the telephony, not only the equipment manufacturers, but the service providers, which are generally, you know, big employers and in big parts of the economy in every country. And if you take a look at Telstra and Optus, they're two of the biggest IT shops. And probably Telstra probably still is the biggest, you know, in Australia. So what happens when the prices go down 50%?
Mm.
That's going to be a huge disruption. And will they have the skills to even adapt to it? It's another thing.
Yeah.
Forget about the margin compression. So I think that will change a lot. I think it's kind of exciting. I think also AI and machine learning is real. And RPA in the process automation is real.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we could talk to you for hours, Jeff, but I know you're a busy man. I guess the one thing, you know, we would like to say is, and speaking on behalf of you, Tony, but you know, we want to thank you for your leadership. You know, we wouldn't, you know, firstly, I don't think an Agile Australia community would be here with you know, without a lot of the work you did early on. And,
agreed.
And certainly, you know, our careers wouldn't be there because you put a focus on agility and gave us a space to learn. I think that's probably in my Suncorp journey,
yep.
You know, the biggest thing I'm thankful for was that, you know, we were able to experiment and try things, and, you know, and that's kind of, you know, set us up in the future. So this is heartfelt. Yeah. Thank you from
any of this. Thanks, but I mean, you guys did that on your own. I just kind of helped nudge stuff a bit, but you got to want to do things differently too. You have to have that. And we had that in Suncorp. We had a bit of a secret sauce there. People that were, you know, the Colin McCurricks, the Josh. We had people there really interested in really doing things differently. And you need that because it's very easy when something's that new to find ways to shut it down. It's harder to keep it going.
Absolutely.
Now, I need to know one thing. Are you still supporting the Brisbane Roar?
I am, you know, they're not
going so great at the moment.
Yes, but I was disappointed that Australia lost in the you know, the first game in the World Cup. I was watching that, but better days ahead.
My son and I are now members, you know, so every time we go to the Raw game, I think, is Jeff here?
So yes, I used to remember when I went, we used 10 or 15 of us would go together.
That's right.
So
yeah.
We had a bunch of tickets. That was fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's one last thing to say.
Yeah. Viva
the revolution.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. See you guys. Thanks.